Hello, welcome to the Microsoft Virtual Academy series, ITIL for IT Professionals. Today we'll be talking about incident and event management. My name is Nathan Lesnowski. I'm Architect and Director of Infrastructure Concurrency. When we talk about incident and event management, we're going to try to focus on the daily life of an IT professional that's doing their job to help their users deliver services. So what's incident management and event management all about? What are we talking about here? Incident management is in-flight support. Its job is to allow us to fix things that are broken. In many ways, it's kind of what people think about when they think about help desk, service desk deliverables in the first place. They sort of think about fixing things that are broken. And unfortunately, it's sometimes just the only way people think about IT. Sometimes when people are talking about their strategic direction, they're really only thinking about IT in terms of fixing things that are broken. And our idea is we want to get beyond that. We don't want to simply be known for fixing things that are broken. We want to be more than just a cost center. We want to be a strategic asset to the business. But that aside, we still need to fix things that are broken. And oftentimes when we're fixing something that's broken, it's one of the most important things we need to do at that particular moment. So the idea behind incident management is provide strategic, organized incident management, something that allows for us to be able to meet our customers' expectations tied to the type of issue that they're having in a non-subjective way, in a way which is more defined and more set to specific types of expectations that allows for us to prioritize the right kinds of work the first time and reduce the number of decisions that the people taking the calls need to make in order to get it to the right people and to provide them the most holistic experience they can have that allows the customer or end users to know that when something's broken, we're going to fix it for them and that we're advocating for fixing their issues. And that we're also prioritizing the right types of things. We're prioritizing the service outage, the service disaster, ahead of the guy who's got an inconvenience on his workstation. So it's allowing us to be able to set the right expectations with our customers. So let's talk about a couple aspects of service management in the form of incident management. One of the most important things to understand is the idea of priority. A lot of times when people are organizing their ticketing systems or their incident management systems, they allow the people taking the calls to define a priority. That's ultimately causing us to have this sort of nomenclature of everything's a high priority. Whenever I talk to people about their incident management practices, I talk about prioritization, they just say, oh, you should just have one priority because everything has a high priority. And ultimately, that's because we're using non-subjective terms. ITIL also defines a combination of forms that create a priority. Those forms are ultimately non-subjective. The idea behind it is that when we think of critical, high, medium, low, we think of sort of our subjective understanding of what that really means. Ultimately, we're making that definition based upon non-subjective terms. And really, that's two things. Impact and urgency. Impact is how big is the issue? Is it one person? Is it a department? Is it a business unit? Is it the entire company? Is it impacting my customers? How big is that issue from the standpoint of the look of the company? That's combined with the how bad is it? So when I think of how bad is this an inconvenience? Is it preventing me from working? Or is it somewhere in between there? So when I think of impacts the whole company, but it's an inconvenience, that might be a lower priority than people who are unable to work in an entire department. So when we think about this, we have to think about the combination of those two elements to define that actual priority. One tip I have here is rather than thinking about this simply in terms of a low to critical rating, or a high, medium, low rating, which sounds kind of subjective on impact and urgency, use non-relative terms like one user, department, whole business, or customer impact on impact, or use inconvenience to I'm unable to work on urgency. Using non-relative terms allows for us to set better customer expectations because when they call in, you say, how is this impacting you? Are you able to work right now? Just want to make sure that I'm understanding it so we can set the right priorities so we get people there at the appropriate time. They say, yeah, I can work. It's just a pop-up on my desktop. I can deal with it later. Or they might say something like, look, I can't serve my customers and get this report out until this is fixed. So our job is to figure out how important something is based upon the combination of those two elements, and then be straightforward with them about the expectations that we're setting. Rather than simply saying everybody's priorities are equal, that really isn't a fair expectation to set, even with the customer. Because if you set those fair expectations with the customers, it allows you to be much more straightforward with them regarding what you're working on first, what you're working on second. But if you're doing it appropriately, you're also advocating for them in the process. You're saying, like, look, here's where you can expect to have this fixed. The problem is that most companies don't set expectations with their customers. So the reason why everything's a high priority is because they don't have reasonable expectations that they've set. Therefore, the people who are receiving that help also don't know when they're going to get help. So they say everything's a high priority because we're not setting expectations with them where they can say, okay, I know this is going to be fixed by the end of the day and I feel good about that, versus I know it's going to be fixed within 2 hours. A lot of things don't need to be fixed within 2 hours. And if we let them know, truly, it will be fixed before the end of the day, they're okay with that. So we need to think about that non-subjective priority when we're then setting the expectations with our customers. So when we're talking about expectations, we're not just defining that based upon priority, but we're then mapping that to something called a service level target. In service management, they're called SLOs, which is an ITIL V2 term. So service level targets allow for us internally, before we even set that expectation with our customers, to define what that promise is, or that thing we're trying to achieve is, inside of our service desk community. Say, when a high priority incident comes in, when a P1 incident comes in, our goal, our service level target, is 2 hours for our resolution time. If it's a P2 ticket, maybe our goal is a 8-hour service level target. So we're organizing and mapping our expectations that we're promising to our, not, maybe not even promising, that we're defining as internal goals for ourselves to set expectations with our customers around, based upon the combination of priority, maybe even some other things. It also defines routing and escalation. So when we're talking about escalations, we're trying to set an appropriate pattern through which our work flows to manage against the right priorities. So for example, one of the things that a lot of companies do is they do direct assignment. So they'll assign to an individual, and that individual assigns it to a different individual, and that individual assigns it to a different individual, and they escalate and de-escalate and do all these things, but nobody's really managing the customer expectations during this process. So what we need to be better at is we need to do better at organizing support groups, which themselves are buckets, and people are taking work from, but then tied to that, we're managing against priorities and perhaps even doing auto-escalation of notifications and acknowledgement tied to those support groups. So one of the practices I'll show you will be using support groups as buckets to which our end users or our IT people are going to determine what kind of work they should be doing, but not necessarily assigning straight up to individual people, but letting them grab that work for themselves. You ultimately could use either practice, but the idea is we want to normalize how the work gets there, so our service desk can manage that work and then set the expectations with the customers. So if the customer calls in 8 hours after having that work item open and it's a P3 incident, maybe that's resolved over the course of 2 days, they can then know the path it took, understand and have a good grasp over how it got there, and be able to communicate with the end user, even if they're not necessarily working on the actual ticket. So it allows for us to be able to be much more structured in terms of how we're promising things to our end users. And that ultimately, the results from this that I've seen very proven out in the workplace is that once we're setting expectations, our customers are then far more happy with the services that we're delivering because they know what to expect. Also, are all incidents created the same in your organization, or are they slightly different from each other? I find that incidents ultimately are very different from each other. If you look at the priority and you look at who they're serving, the major differentiation between two big incident types is a standard incident process for normal operations and then a major incident process. Let's kind of make a kind of simple example here. Let's say your normal incident, you're the fire department, and your normal incident process is this guy who lighted his grill on fire and started a fire in his backyard, maybe little bit of his house on fire from his grill, you know, got out of control, doesn't really understand how to use it, calls the fire department, they come over and they put out the grill fire, right? Simple issue, could have burned down the house, but it wasn't necessarily even an entire house fire. Maybe in another incident, the house is actually on fire and they have to come put out that house fire and they have to maybe even save someone from the house, right? That's kind of a normal incident process, right? There's different levels of how bad that could be. The guy who's got his grill on fire, probably not as big of a deal as the guy whose house is on fire, right? So we've got some different like levels and priorities against which that's being rated. A major incident process would be something like, we've got an entire factory that's on fire. It's not just a house, it's like this gigantic factory that produces chemicals that are gonna spill all over the neighborhood and poison all sorts of people. So a major incident process is, look, we've gotta get everybody here, we gotta put out this fire before we have this catastrophe on our hands. Or maybe we already have a catastrophe, and we need everybody here to be able to take care of it. The question you have to ask yourself is, do I have a process for dealing with that's structured, or is my process sort of shoot from the hip? Ultimately, if you don't have a structured process for dealing with these kinds of things, like a major incident or even typical escalations inside of an incident management process, you're doing your company a disservice because you're trying to reinvent the wheel every single time you run into that problem. So one of the things you'll see is that we want to differentiate between a major incident and a regular incident as we go through our processes. All right, so let's do a little bit of demos. Where does this live in the Microsoft space? Well, again, most of the incident management, work management processes live inside a System Center Service Manager. But a lot of these interactions come from things like Operations Manager. And remediations may occur through things like Orchestrator and SMA or SCCM and VMM. We may be acting out remediations like rebooting a server because there's an outage or undeploying a particular release or restarting services. I built a process for a company once where every time this particular issue happened, the services would stop. So we used Orchestrator to be able to automatically restart those services when an operations manager alert was detected. We'd restart the services, we'd test the application to make sure it came back up, and then we'd close the alert. And it ultimately resolved the incident, but we linked each one of those to a problem. So then we knew for each one of our individual incidents, how are we doing in terms of resolving problems for those incidents. So we then were able to target our problem management against where most of the incidents were occurring. All right, so let's demo a little bit of this. Okay, we're inside of System Center Service Manager, and we're inside the area of incident management. Now this is inside the console experience of System Center Service Manager. However, we're also able to arm people for access anywhere type of scenarios. So when you're thinking about incident management, I would encourage you to think again about how do we arm them with access from their smartphone, from their tablet, from the console experience, from the web experience, all these different places. And System Center, in conjunction with the web consoles, can definitely serve that. So when we're looking at our work processes, you can see that I've organized various different things I'm interested in around service management in the incident management space. I'm interested in just incidents that are open or all incidents, but I'm also interested in other types of things, like incidents that need a knowledge article, ones which are have been open, but perhaps we have an opportunity to be able to open up a knowledge article related to, or perhaps incidents that have parent incidents associated with them, where there are perhaps maybe 5 or 6 or 10 incidents that are open for a particular issue, and there's a parent incident associated with them. Or perhaps incidents which have gone through a process of escalation that I want to manage, or ones which have breached their service level agreement or have gone into a warning approaching a breach. Or perhaps manager views or individual support group views for people like P1 incident groups or tier 1 groups and so on. So you can see I've organized my information to see the things that are interesting to me. Inside of all open incidents, I've organized the personal view that articulates the things that I'm, the way in which I want to be able to see this information. So I can see I've grouped them based upon priority. So I can see I have 2 P2 incidents, 13 P3 incidents, and 14 P4 incidents. Inside of my incidents, you can see some information that's coming from incident management, such as the assigned to user and the affected user and the support group over here and the title and so on. So let's open up an example incident. Mr. Potato Head had called in and he's indicated that his feet are missing, which is a pretty common occurrence for Mr. Potato Head. He has a sort of reoccurring thing where he tends to lose elements of his makeup. He likes to lose his ears and his feet and so on. So Mr. Potato Head, you can't walk without these particular issues. Now, when we look at this, you can see the different practices that we just talked about coming into fruition, right? So you can see, here's the affected user. He's the individual who opened up the work item. I can see information about that affected user, so I can call him. A lot of older systems cause you to have to document manually things like contact information and so on. We get this information from Active Directory. I can also see that my promise to him has been breached. So I've promised either internally and not necessarily shared that entirely, but maybe I've set expectations with him that I'm going to get back to him and solve this issue within a particular time. And I've breached that promise that I have for him. I can see what it is that I've breached. I can see that I've breached my concurrency P3 incident SLO. Now, I can also see that I have a title and a description and then a classification category. In this particular case, it's a hardware issue. So one of the basic things you want to accomplish here is I oftentimes want to be able to hire a person off the street and have them be able to open up work items in my business and get to the right place. Some companies, their service desks require knowledge to be able to resolve certain issues, and that's fine. But ultimately, I don't want the knowledge of where work items go to be tied up in individual people's brains. I want it to be baked into the system because that causes my people to be more focused on resolution knowledge than routing knowledge. So what you usually do is you bake your routing knowledge tied to the classification category. So things like classification category, where I'm selecting applications, SharePoint, or hardware, or network connectivity, or login and password, these different things, their job is to allow for a person to intuitively be able to pick where this is supposed to go. It also facilitates things like typing. So you can see if I type HA, I'm getting both the SharePoint content and the hardware content. SharePoint contains HA, right? So I'm facilitating a person to be able to quickly figure out what classification category something is. They don't have to know any special routing knowledge to do that. They can just interact with the user in a nice way to be able to figure out what the problem is. They don't need to know how to solve it. They may just need to know what the problem is. And then I have impact and urgency. So I can see that Mr. Potato Head is the only person who's missing his feet. So when I say, is this impacting the entire business? Is it impacting a site, few users, or one user? In this case, it's impacting just one user. Now you could go low, medium, high, critical there, but what feels easier for your generic IT person to pick out? Is it non-subjective examples of those terms? Or is it subjective examples of those terms? Ultimately, low, medium, high, critical is not a subjective term, but most people don't understand it that way. Sometimes people do one user, then parenthetical reference low, right? It's another way to do it, right? In this case, I like to make sure that something that's easy to pick from a list that can't be confused is there. Another part of this is urgency. Well, Mr. Potato Head can't work because he doesn't have feet. So his urgency is able to work, no feasible workaround. Now, perhaps I could create a workaround for him. You know, maybe in his case, he's got the roller skate, not just maybe can't find the feet part, but maybe I can convince him to use the roller skates to be able to get around. So maybe I can make just a significant work interruption. So in that case, I can change these to be able to address different priorities, right? So it allows for me to be able to define different needs and also determine whether or not it's going to change the expectations on the priority side. So for example, if he's got roller skates, maybe he's just inconvenienced. So you can see that my priority changed to 4. Whereas if I change it to unable to work, it's now a priority 3. So it allows for me to be able to define, I can't modify this. It allows me to define it based upon these non-relative terms. Now at this point, we're typically stopped making input because I'm going to allow the system then to define where things go. I'm going to use things like routing rules to get to the right support groups. But just to show you an example of what this might contain, I have the support groups themselves that'll get assigned based upon the classification category. Usually Orchestrator plays a part in that. I have an ability to escalate. So if I'm talking with the guy and he says, look, you know, I need my feet. I mean, I can't walk around until I have these feet. You can say, okay, let's escalate this to someone who's going to be able to resolve it faster. Maybe he's got some backup feet and one of the other Mr. Potato Heads. Maybe Mrs. Potato Head's got some spare feet. So I can check the escalated button. I can also do an assign to. In this case, Christopher has picked up the service, this individual incident from his support group and assigned it to himself. Sometimes people do direct assignment here. I tend not to do direct assignment because I find that allowing them to flow into a support group and then having somebody in that support group pick them up allows for better resolution. But some companies do a direct assignment in certain cases. What's this primary owner thing for? The primary owner is used when you have someone who's working on an incident, or perhaps somebody who's maintained as an advocate. Oftentimes that's the service desk, or it's an individual on the service desk who maintains primary ownership over the work item, but somebody else is working on that work item at a given point. That's important to understand. So let's talk about this as it flows through in terms of a status flow. So if I go to look at my overall statuses this could sit in, when the work item initially comes in, it goes into an active state. Now, it can then go to something like active acknowledge. This is a custom state that I define. You can define any kind of state that you're interested in. So active, then active acknowledged facilitates an organization of support desk where after somebody has gotten an assignment, they have to acknowledge the work item before it gets actually worked on. It's very common in direct assignment scenarios where if someone gets assigned to it, we have to acknowledge the work item. Or a pickup scenario. You can also manage that based upon whether or not assigned to contain someone or not. We also have pending. Pending is very overused, and it's something we have to really defense ourselves against. Pending is really only appropriate when the customer has not given you the information necessary to be able to give them appropriate expectations and resolve their work item. So if Mr. Potato had simply emailed in help, he's not really telling me what I can actually help him with, right? I don't know if his feet are missing. I don't know if he's just unhappy about something. No, I don't know how I can help him. So in that case, it probably is pending, right? Because I have to put it back in his court to tell me what he needs help with. But let's say that I have an expectation I've already set with the Potato Head family that they need to have a certain number of spare feet in case they lose them, right? And we can resolve that within, say, 4 hours. Same way you would think about, like, if you have a laptop, right? General expectations within a company is that I've got spare laptops, or I have a support agreement with my external support vendor to bring parts to my laptops. And if it's broken and I call them the service desk, they're going to be able to fix that within a reasonable point of time. I can't put in pending simply because I'm waiting for parts, because I should already have an agreement with a company that allows me to have the necessary parts to fix laptops within the time frame that I've promised to my customers. So pending is something we need to organize around properly. Resolved is the real first hop on a resolution state for our incidents. So typically something goes from active or active acknowledged into a resolved status. Resolved means I've fixed the issue for them. Like if my laptop's broken and my hard drive's busted, I got a new hard drive, it's now in a resolved state. If I found some feet for Mr. Potato Head, I now have them in a resolved state. But let's say that on my laptop example, after I gave them, I've set this resolve, after I've given them the new hard drive, it broke again. That allows me to be able to go back into other states, right? The typical hop here is from resolve to close. The reason why there's a two-stage hop is because it allows us to control service quality when we're helping our customers. It's a very important practice for us to implement as we're looking at changing the way we execute on IT services. We also contain information around the affected services and affected items. So as I'm working with this person, I can see that I have some relationships. Usually I set things like affected services through the relationship to the classification category. So when someone picks something like SharePoint or hardware, I'm going to relate the class to the affected services automatically. The reason why I would relate an affected service is because the service functions as an aggregation point. So remember when we were talking about customer ordering services, and when someone we're launching this application that our customers are going to order stuff from us through. So that relationship to customer ordering services says, okay, what does it cost in terms of work to be able to support this IT service? So every month I can say I had 34 incidents related to customer ordering services, and I had 15 problems and 24 service requests. And that number goes up or down based upon the month. So it allows me to look at my services holistically, not just tied to incidents, but also other work items too. You can also see the incident relationship to a customer's CIs. So in this case, I can see that this person has a relationship to an individual CI from the CMDB. That's where configuration management comes in. So I can add that individual CI as a relationship to my incident, and I can add other relationships to other CIs. Finally, as I'm working with this person on the phone, I'm probably going to be capturing information in an action log. In an action log, especially in incident management, our goal is to log the things that we're doing, so we're able to articulate that back out to the business. So I can talk about those issues. I've talked with Mr. I can add that as an individual thing I'm working on, and I can also mark it as private. So the idea behind this is I follow these structured patterns. They auto-assign to the right support groups. People pick up those items from their support groups. And then as they work on them, they track things in the action log. It allows for me to be able to be very specific. And also then, because we want the service desk to be the single point of contact, it then allows for us to be able to have that service desk know what's happening with our work items. Some other practices that are very common in ITIL around incident management is the option of templates. So perhaps something is happening all the time, like a password reset. I can apply a template tied to that incident that allows me to resolve it faster. I also have things like setting the first response. So for example, one of the things that we're really interested in is whether or not we are resolving incidents when they're initially coming into the service desk, and also whether or not they're getting resolved in, say, the second or the third or the fourth hop. So that metric is something that we're going to judge ourselves against, because we know the less number of hops a person has to go through to get it resolved, and the less amount of time that we have to get it resolved, the better customer experience we're going to have. Now, last thing I want to show you here is that you have a relationship between this work item and parent incidents. So for example, I can either make this a parent incident, or I can relate it to other parent incidents. So let's pretend that I want to link it to another parent incident. So I can say, here's some other parent incidents that exist. These are resolved ones that are related to different types of issues. Wireless internet not working, can't log into SharePoint, there's an Exchange issue, nothing related to Mr. Potato Head. But maybe there's a lot of people losing Mr. Potato Head feet. You know, it's something that a lot of kids have problems with. So perhaps I need to convert this into a parent. So this allows me to take this, and now it's a parent incident. So I can link child incidents to this individual parent incident. I can say, okay, every time we have this issue, I can relate these incidents to this parent, and then I can resolve them all at once. Very common, like if you had an exchange outage or that customer ordering application was down and you had 30 people call in, you create individual incidents for each of them, related to them to the parent incident, and when you resolve the parent incident, resolve all those work items all together. So you can see how when you're talking about incident management, a lot of these practices allow for us to be much more effective in how we're serving our customers, because we're setting expectations more appropriately with them. Now, when we're talking about serving our incidents, there's a couple other things that you guys should probably be aware of. So we're looking at this, we're not just concerned with prioritization and organization within the context of parent incidents, we're also interested in how we judge these incidents and how we aggregate these incidents. So when I look at this, if I'm a manager or I'm a manager of a support group, I'm going to be interested in some of these views that I showed earlier, like how many incidents do I have with a service level of breached? How many incidents do I have with a service level of warning? So you can see, for example, I have 14 different incidents that have a service level of breach. That's not necessarily good, but it allows for me to be able to organize myself to function by exception, not necessarily having to function in each individual incident. I have some customers that are doing hundreds of thousands of incidents a month. You know, they can't look at every individual incident, but they are looking at the exceptions to those incidents to determine what is something they need to focus on to fix versus what are things that they may not need to focus on to fix. Problem is that if you're not setting expectations, you don't need to know if you breached anything. So if we're thinking about incident management, we need to really focus on definitively setting our customer expectations, having a straightforward automated pattern it flows through, and then having an ability to determine if our customer expectations are not being met. So am I getting my resolution time appropriately set? Am I getting back to my customers in the right amount of time? Am I having incidents reopened? You know, these different things that I need to watch out for that allow for me to make better decisions. So when we're thinking about incident management, it's out of the context of a tool like Service Manager, we're not just building a better tool, we're also building better processes that tie to the tool that allow for us then to organize our service desk in a better way. So we're prioritizing the right kinds of things. All right, so now that we've shown an example of incident priority and categorization, support groups, and services inside the context of Service Manager, what do we do now? What's our next steps? Let's talk about a couple of practical things. First, how do I take, route, and manage my incidents today? You really should ask yourself that question of, are some of the things we're talking about in incident management practices that you have, or are you doing largely manual routing, manual escalation, or is everything rated a high priority? What describes your service desk experience? Do I have an escalation process that things flow through when they're getting to a point where they need to be escalated, or is it mostly people running around trying to fight fires? Do I have a major incident process? Is the guy's backyard grill fire rated at the same level as the chemical plant that's burning to a crisp? Do I have a way of managing expectations against the guy with the grill fire to say, look, you know, I've got to go deal with this chemical plant fire. I can't be dealing with the grill fire right now. You know, how are you managing that individual's expectations? Are you simply saying they're both high priority? You're kind of lying to them and to yourself. So next time, we're going to talk about the flip side of this, service request management. Because we're not organizing everything as a ticket, we're breaking them between incident and service request, how do we organize ourselves appropriately inside the service request space to be able to fit and manage our customers' expectations? How to receive end user requests in a way which is appropriate for them?